Hi everyone, my name is Kimani. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Betsy, for that introduction. Thank you, Mark, for having us out here. My sobriety day is August 5th of 2021, and Pacific Group is my home group, and Kenna F is my sponsor tonight. And I'm really nervous. Oh my goodness, I wasn't at first, but now I'm like, oh, well, I'm actually speaking. Now I gotta actually talk. But all I'm here today is just to share you guys my experience, strength, and hope, and what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today, and praying that we all just go to our beds and pillows sober. And sobriety is the gift that I try my best not to take for granted anymore. I took it for granted for a long time, like even, in my sobriety, like I didn't even like see it as a gift. But each day, like now, I'm trying my best to just be more and more appreciative of my sobriety and this program, because it truly saved my life. And if you're new, if you don't hear anything else, what I want you to hear tonight is that Alcoholics Anonymous works. And it works very well. We have a track record. And people here actually recover if we do a few simple steps. And so I'm just gonna get straight into it. I am from Chicago. I live in LA now, but I'm from Chicago, the suburbs, born and raised. I'm not hard or anything like that. And I was born to a single mother, and it was just me and her, and I was like, I was a spoiled kid, and then all of a sudden as well, like, my mom was a pastor, and so God was introduced into my life at a very young age. We used to have these, like, prayer meetings, just me and her, when I was, like, 5 years old at, like, 10 o'clock at night, and she'd be like, girl, you better pray under that cover. I'm like, okay, yes, God, thank you for being here. And I didn't know what I was doing. I'm just, like, copying my mom, right, because she'll be into it, and I just wasn't where she was at, but I loved her love for God. And honestly, I love church so much. Like, I didn't really have a bad experience with church until later on in my drinking years, which we will cover. But the thing with me, though, is that, like, I always felt like I wasn't good enough for all the rules. And that played out as well as when my drinking started. And so, like, after a few years, my mom eventually got married to this guy that she grew up with. And it was all peachy and creamy at first, but then abuse and like manipulation got introduced to our home right away. I remember waking up to like cops outside of my house because my new stepdad was like chasing my pregnant mom around the house with a knife, and they're taking my pregnant mom away because my mom actually worked for DCFS and she does not play that abuse mess. So if you try to attack her, she will get you. And she flipped over my stepdad and the glass shattered. And honestly, pictures like that became very like a regular occurrence for me after that moment when I was 7. My mom ended up having 2 more children, my younger siblings. And we just went from like homelessness and sleeping in cars, because after that situation, my mom separated from my stepdad, and they kept doing this thing of reconciliation, breaking up. And it just became a very chaotic household very quick. But what I appreciate and admire so much about my mom is that no matter where we're at, whether we were like in a shelter, homeless, back with my ex-stepdad, or like living with family or friends, she always brought love to the house. And like, I always felt safe with my mom no matter what. And so one thing that I decided at a very young age, like maybe when I was 10 or 11, because I had these new siblings to help my mom take care of, I was like, you know what, I'm gonna do all that I can to get out of here so I could take care of my family so we never have to live like this anymore. I was tired of being broke. Like, we got evicted like twice, our lights went on and off all the time. Like, being poor just was not it, okay? And I just did not appreciate it. I thought I got dealt a bad hand. And so I got good grades in school and just made sure that I was on the path. And I didn't drink at all, like, in my teenage years, because I was also born with hypothyroidism. And it's not that big of a deal. However, my mom told me, like, since I take medicine every day for my hypothyroidism, if I drink, I will die, right? She said, it will mix with your medicine, you will die, and basically that's it. And death is my number one fear. Like, I don't know about you, but I kind of like living. And so I was like, okay, well, if I want to stay alive, I'm not going to drink. And it never was a second thought to me, because my mom's word is law, and she also believed in whooping, so, like, I don't want none of that action either. And so, yeah, like, I did exactly what I set out to do. I did really well in school. I got scholarships to go to Mizzou, University of Missouri. And as soon as I got there, the first thing I did was go to the doctor because I had all these health problems. And I told my doctor, I was like, hey, like, I know I'm in school away from my mom, but you don't have to worry. Like, I'm not going to drink. I know the deal, right? And my doctor was like, what are you talking about? Like, you can drink if you want to drink. Like, legally, I couldn't because I was 18, right? But he was just like, you can do whatever you want. Like, nothing's going to happen. And I wasn't even excited or nothing crazy. I was just like, oh, okay, like this is good to know. This is good for future use, right? But what I didn't realize, what I shared last time when I spoke, is like when my mom told me, like, if I drink, I die, like it reminds me of like Bill's story when I started doing my step work. It was like that ominous warning I failed to heed, right? Like my mom didn't realize like one day I'll be alcoholic, right? But she just knew maybe somehow, some way, like alcoholism, like for me, just isn't it. And with me being an alcoholic, to drink really is to die. And I didn't know that when I, you know, decided like, oh, okay, drinking is something I'm gonna set out to do. And so on my first night of drinking, it was nothing special. I was in a college dorm with some off-brand vodka and Solo cups. And I'm just down in cups, back to back to back, nothing crazy. And then I'm like blacking out, right? I guess that is crazy, but because the thing was, I kept downing them back to back because I wanted something to happen, right? Like I was like waiting for something, like, and nothing was happening. And that's why I kept downing it. But then eventually I started blacking out. I became really violent that night. I'm cursing everybody out in that dorm. I'm becoming a nuisance. And I got sentenced to alcohol school on my first night of drinking. And of course, like, I'm not gonna tell my mom this, right? Because, like, you know, her good girl has now is like going crazy. And so I just took the class, didn't even like think about it twice, but like all these friends that I became newfound friends with, they was like, Kimani, what the heck? Like, you literally tried to put your hands on us. And since I'm a blackout drinker, I have no idea what you're talking about, right? So I'm just giving these like soft apologies just so we can like make it go away. However, I didn't realize like in that moment, that night when I started drinking, the craving in me started right away. And I wanted to drink all the time. And I didn't become an everyday drinker right off the bat. I was like a weekend binge drinker. But as soon as I had some alcohol in my system, it was on and popping like crazy. And not in a good way. And the violence did not stop at all. Like I remember, this is more of a brownout, not a blackout, but I was like coming to like, from drinking so much, I was a Hennessy drinker hard. And I was coming to from drinking Hennessy, and I remember like, I'm yelling at my dorm mate's door, and I'm like, let me at her, let me at her. And I'm kicking her door down. And I'm like coming to consciousness as I'm doing this. And I'm like, wait, what am I doing? But I'm already this far, so it's like, we gotta keep going. I don't know why I'm in this moment, but clearly she must have did something. And so I'm still at it, and I'm like going in and out of consciousness. And now people are scared of me. People don't wanna be my friends. And I lost a lot of friends in that first year of drinking. And what ended up happening is that I moved off campus. Since I live in Missouri, weed is illegal. And so like, if you smoke weed, you go to jail. It's legal now, not that I've tried it, but it's legal now in Missouri. But back then it was illegal. And so I never tried smoking on the dorms because I'm not trying to go to jail either. But as I like moved off campus to my own apartment with my friends that I still had, thank God, like, I started mixing drinking with smoking weed. And now I'm not blacking out anymore, right? Like now I found the magical elixir where I can finally like be present with you, have a good time drinking and smoking and not be a nuisance. But what I didn't realize is like I wanted to do that all the time, right? Like the fellowship that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous, where we feel so close to each other and that we just relate so easily. Like Priya was talking about like how we were in the car and we're so able to relate to one another because we come from the same shipwreck, the same struggles, right? I felt that when I was drinking and using, like with my friends, like out there, because like whenever I started smoking and drinking, I just felt like I was oh so close and connected, and we could like just laugh and be together. But I was just high. Like I just became a low bottom of the barrel friend, right? And I wanted to do that all the time. And those dreams of like becoming a doctor, take care of my family, like it got thrown by the wayside. Like I eventually stopped showing up to school because now I am drinking every day, right? Like we got Taco Tuesday, we got Wine Wednesday, Thirsty Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday's the weekend, and Monday, I mean, I'm finna drink on Tuesday, so might as well drink right now, right? And so it became a constant roller coaster of events. And now I'm not showing up to life anymore. I'm not answering my mom's calls. I'm not answering my roommates or knocking on the door anymore. I'm pissing in my bed because now I don't even have control of my bladder, right? And it just becomes a thing where it's like, as long as I have my bottle and my drugs, oh, and my men, I'm okay, right? And it became a thing where my mom is now calling my friends to see, like, what's happening to her child. She hasn't heard from me. I'm getting, like, withdrawals in my school, and which my mom has to pay for. Well, now me, because I take care of all my debt now, which I have to pay for. And I just have no clue that I'm affecting others because I'm so selfish in my alcoholism that I think my drinking and using is only affecting me. And so I never forget when my roommates, I sent them this cryptic message. I started watching this show called 13 Reasons Why, right? And I watched this show, and it's basically a show about suicide. And I'm such a dramatic alcoholic. I wasn't suicidal, right? But I want to see if people care about me. Right? I'm so insane. And so I send my friends all these cryptic messages like, oh my goodness, like this might be the end. Like, I'm so sorry. As I've got my room, like my room door is locked, right? And so eventually my roommate's like, Kimani, that's not funny. Like, we're gonna call the police if you don't answer us. And I just ignore them. And so eventually a couple days pass and I hear the police on the other side, and I hear my mom on speakerphone, and I can just hear her screaming, saying, Kimani, like, please, like, answer us, like, you're hurting us, like, are you okay? And mind you, I'm just selfish. Nothing has happened to me at all. Like, I am just surrounded by bottles around in my room, and I cannot say I can't stop drinking. Like, those words, just because that's not a good enough excuse. Like, that sounds crazy to me. And so as soon as they bolt down the door, because the police eventually bolted down, I see my friends come inside my room. And I told myself, I said, Kimani, think quick. And as soon as I jumped up, I said, take me to the psych ward. Like, I'm crazy, right? And my friends was like, okay. And she took me to the psych ward, the university psych ward. And I, you know, they kind of released me right away since I was already a student and since I was already getting psych services. And I finally called my mom back after I don't know how many weeks. And she said, Kimani, like, what happened? And I was like, well, mom, like, I was finally honest. I was like, I can't stop drinking. Like, I had no other words. I was just like, I sincerely cannot stop drinking. And, you know, and she, like, heard me that night, and I just hear my siblings screaming in the background, right? And, you know, I feel like for any normal person, like, that event would have caused a change. That event would have caused a shift. And I probably cried. I did cry that night, like, for a little bit, but the next day, like, I got some weed, and I was good. You know, like, the way I forget the pain that I not only caused myself but others as soon as I take another drink, it is just, it's so crazy to me. And that's why I'm so grateful that even today I go to so many meetings as I go to, because I really do forget. It's like my brain, like, it's like squirrel. It's like if it's not in my face, I'm not gonna know, right? And so after that encounter, I tried therapy because I'm like, okay, it's the way my childhood was. Like, my childhood was crazy. My ex-stepdad was abusive. My real dad was in and out of my life. Like, he wasn't really there for me. He became alcoholic. Like, let me go to therapy and, like, fix me, right? And I go to therapy, and I'm there consistently, on time, every week. I'm not showing up for anything else anymore, not school, not nothing. But for therapy, like, all hands on deck to talk about me, I'm going to show up, right? And so I show up, and she originally diagnoses me with borderline personality disorder, and I get so interested. I'm like, I want to know everything about it. Like, I read all my therapy notes. I'm like, yes, yes, yes. This is great. And also at the same time, too, I started getting back involved in the church, because church worked so well for my mom, and it still is working for my mom to this day. I'm like, okay, like, I'm going to get back plugged in. I'm going to see what I can do. And so I decided to go through with getting rebaptized and becoming a disciple and doing this whole, getting a discipler. And because the way they were living, it looked way better than what I was living. And so I was like, okay, like, they can rely on God. Maybe so can I. But the problem with me as well, too, is that I deal with a lot of shame, with not only with my drinking, but just, like, with me as a person, right? Like, with the actions I'm taking. Like, I was saying before, like, I use liquor, weed, and men. And with my sex conduct, like, my sex conduct was so, like, atrocious. Like, I remember I used to go on campus with, like, my backpack and my hoodie. and I would put my hoodie on. I would tie my hoodie up so no one could see my face. And I would run across campus because I didn't want to make eye contact with anyone because I didn't want to know about what the people were saying about me. I didn't know if I like slept with that person or that person. And you know, I just like the shame of it all. Like I just felt like there's no real way that God can forgive all this, right? And so when I went through this disciple process, I didn't do all the things they told me to do. But what I did was I did all the studies that they had, right? And I was always honest. One thing I always like pride myself on, well, I don't know about myself, but with God with me in that situation, is that I was always honest with my disciples about where I was at. So I always told them that I couldn't stop drinking. I always told them that my sex conduct was crazy. But there was no change. Like, they'll give me, like, directions, like how what sponsors do to this day. But I didn't listen to anything. It was just like me in therapy. Like, I'll just go throw up on them and then go back to the way I was living. And it came to a head when eventually, like, I had this drug dealer boyfriend. Bless his soul. Drug dealer boyfriend. And, you know, we drank and smoked a lot because, you know, it was free. So, of course, I'm going to do that. And, you know, as we were involved with each other, I eventually got pregnant. And I remember, because my mom is a pastor, and so is my grandfather, and my nana's a first lady, I was like, there's no way I can, like, be pregnant and, like, embarrass my family. Like, absolutely not. But again, I was always honest with my disciples, and I told them exactly where I was at. And of course, you know, they were against it with what the religion views of that church was. But I just couldn't do it. And so what ended up happening is that I planned to get an abortion. And I drove back to Chicago from Missouri, and I told my cousin about it. We go to this clinic, and my church is calling my mom, right? They're calling my mom. They're not telling her what's happening, but all they're saying is, you need to call your daughter. She's in danger, right? And my mom was asking me, like, Kimani, what's going on? And I was like, oh, I have no idea what they're talking about. Like, I think maybe I had a flat tire yesterday. That might be what the issue is, because I did have a flat tire, and they fixed it, right? But eventually, they just kept calling. They wouldn't stop calling. And so my mom wouldn't stop calling me. And so I told her, I said, Mom, like, I'm finna get an abortion. Like, I'm pregnant. And it was just silence on the phone. And I remember she was like, Kimani, you felt like you couldn't tell me that? And I was like, absolutely not. Like, I'm going to embarrass you. Because if also, I'm so selfish that I'm always concerned about what things look like, right? Like, I don't actually want to change. I just want to appear changed, right? And so what ended up happening is that I went to the abortion clinic. I took whatever pill they told me to take. And then I went home, and my mom told me she found this clinic that can reverse abortions. I don't know. And we went to this doctor clinic, and I started taking these pills so that I can stay pregnant from the pill I took previously. But unfortunately, like, because of, you know, medication, things like that, I miscarried anyway. And I remember, like, when that happened, because I was bleeding out, I want to say for like 6 months straight. I had to go to a doctor like every week to see if I still had pregnancy hormone in my body, and I did every single week for 6 months. And I was also like bleeding out for 6 months. I was like, okay, like, I'm gonna just start drinking every day. I don't care. Like, this is too depressing. Like, I am like a terrible daughter. Like, I put my mom through all this. And also the church kicked me out. Like, I never forget, after when I came back from Chicago, I went to have a meeting with the church because I did not appreciate that they kept calling my mom. So I'm planning to like go off on them, and they're planning to disfellowship me from the church. And I thought at that time, I was like, how dare they? Like, this is church. They don't kick people out of church. But what my sponsor Kenna told me in my recent fourth step is that, like, Kimani, like, let me give you a perspective change. Like, they're in the business of like saving souls and your salvation, right? And I was like, yes. And she was like, and they thought your salvation was in danger, correct, if you did this act? And I was like, yes. And she's like, and you went to them for help, correct? They didn't come to you. I was like, correct. She was like, yes. And she said, and they disfellowship you so you get closer to God, correct? And I was like, correct. She's like, do you know where I'm going here? I was like, yes, I see. And eventually, over time, I was able to have that perspective change and see, like, if it wasn't for that moment, I don't know if my drinking would have escalated, and I don't know if I would have came to Alcoholics Anonymous as quickly as I did. And so eventually, my therapist just made it plain, like, I can't help you. Go to AA. There's nothing I can do here. And I said, wow, that's not nice. And But I went to AA. I went to AA in 2019. I didn't get sober till 2021. When I came in here, I thought I knew a little bit more than you guys. Like, I was a little bit college, like, educated, right? I felt like I'm the oldest out of six kids. Like, you know, I know how to run and manage things, you know? But what I didn't realize, what I know now, is that I don't know anything. Like, at all. Like, I not only do I need God, but I need guidance and help from friends and sponsorship, because my best ideas, like, landed me in Alcoholics Anonymous, mind you, right? And so in my first meeting, I remember these ladies were so kind, and they, like, offered me my first big book that I still use to this day. They told me to put my sobriety date in it, and so I picked somebody there to be my sponsor. I had no idea what was going on, but I just asked her, can you be my sponsor? She said yes. But unfortunately, I didn't stay sober at that time. Like, I had so much defiance in me that every suggestion she had given me, kind of like my therapy, kind of like my discipler, I didn't listen to. Like, I would just yap all my problems, didn't listen to anything. And so after getting fired from sponsorship three times and me firing my last sponsor, the pandemic happened. And now 2 years have passed. I can't string along more than 60 days. I'm treating Alcoholics Anonymous like a revolving door, not realizing that my life is hanging in the balance. Like, I am literally playing with my life. Like, I'm waking up, like, next to garbage cans with scars on my back, right? Like, I'm waking up with, like, strange men. And that's not even strange to me anymore. I'm just like, oh, okay, cool, bet. And it's just like, I, like, the hole in me keeps getting deeper and deeper and deeper. And I'm not suicidal, but, like, I don't know how to live anymore. And so now I'm getting scared. And the pandemic finally happened. And I'm not gonna lie, I was kind of relieved, because, like, finally, like, the heat was off my back to, like, do better. Like, everybody's life was over, not just mine. So it was like, I was like, okay, like, no more questions asked. Like, I can just, like, do what I want to do in peace. But my smoking, like, increased, like, insanely. And I remember, like, I would, like, wake up and, like, have the shakes. And if I did not smoke, like, I would, like, lose my mind. And I was a phlebotomist at the time, and I would, like, go to my job high, like, trying to stick people, which is a huge QA violation. And I'm like, yeah, Kimani, we cannot live like this anymore. And eventually I got on this meeting called Mocha Mondays, a Zoom meeting. It was an all black women AA meeting. And they had the announcement for sponsorship, like you guys did this evening earlier. And this girl named Sammy said she could sponsor. And I gave her my number, and I told her I need help right away, because I did not know, like, what was going to happen to me, whether someone was going to do something to me or if I was going to do something to someone. And so she had me call her the next day at 10:30, sharp, not a minute before, not a minute after. And we shared our case with each other. And she asked me, like, are you willing to do anything to stay sober? And I said, yes. And I had no idea, like, what that entailed, right? I just knew, like, the way I was living was not working. And thank God for Sam. Like, honestly, like, thank God for Sammy through and through. She told me that her home group was the Pacific group. Everything was on Zoom during that time. And so I'm in Missouri. I log on to this Pacific group meeting. And mind you, I was going to AA in Missouri, where most of our meetings are 20 people, right? And I log on, it's 1,000 people. And I said, what is this meeting? And I was just so shook at how structured this group was, and, like, how the speakers shared their experience. And I related so much. And Sammy took me through the steps. And I'll never forget, like, as I was doing my fourth step, I really, like, you know, I was really scared to, like, let people know my business, right? Like, my mom always said, like, what happens in this house stays in this house. And so as I'm writing this, I'm reminding myself, like, oh, this girl's gonna know my business. So it was some stuff that I even, like, kept off there, like some stuff that I thought was inappropriate that I did, like, when I was 5 years old. And she asked me at the end, like, is there anything you left out? And I was like, yeah, a lot. And I ended up telling her, and she was like, oh, and, you know, she just was like, oh, like, I did that stuff too. Or she just, like, gave me a different perspective shot on that. But also with my fourth step as well, like, especially when it came to, like, my stepdad, and also any men in my life, really, like, when it came to the my part section, like, I remember from my stepdad, I put bleach in his shampoo to poison him because he was abusive to my mom, right? And my sponsor was like, Kimani, there is no because. Take all your becauses out and rewrite your fourth step, and just leave your part as your part. And I was like, but Sammy, if I don't write the because, like, it's going to look like I'm a bad person. She was like, Kimani, you did bad actions. Let it stay there. And I was like, okay. And so just to hear, like, I poisoned my stepdad and there's no, like, thing after. I'm just like, that's crazy. But what I didn't realize is that, you know, there's hope after the fourth, right? Like, I was in such a hopeless state when I was newly sober. I was so disrespectful. I was insane out of my mind. And I didn't think things were gonna get better, but the steps don't end after step four. The steps don't end after step five. And I didn't know that a different way of life was available to me if I kept going. But I couldn't, like, stop there. Just because I had those actions then did not mean I had to keep acting that way, right? And so, and one of the things I told her too when I first got here, for some reason, when I, like, on my first day of a meeting, I saw the ninth step and I was like, I'm never doing that. I was like, if people did something to me, they deserve it. Like, I was a very vengeful alcoholic, right? And I just knew, like, whenever that came, it just wasn't happening for Kimani, right? And so as we're, like, getting closer and closer to the step, I'm telling my sponsor, like, hey, like, I'm really nervous about this step. She's like, well, we're not on step nine. We're on step six. So we're going to stay in step six. And I was like, okay, I can take that. And so as we get closer and closer to step nine, what I didn't realize is that I was going to have a spiritual experience. And the fact that I've worked all my steps before then, including, like, step two and three, where I, like, redefined my God, it gave me the courage to actually take that step. Like, I talked about my shame when I came in. It was a lot of, like, crazy actions that I took, right, in regard to my sex conduct, in regard to not only that, but, like, my friendships, my stuff with my family. Like, the fact I grew up poor, I remember in my drinking days, I stole so much money from my mom because our accounts were linked, that I made her lights go off while I was in college. And I remember my mom called me, and she was like, Kimani, you know we're sitting in the dark because you stole all this money. And I told her right off the gate, I said, well, when I was that young, I had to deal with that too, so my siblings can deal with it. And I, like, hung up the phone on her. And when I got time, like, to that men's step, I was just so scared because I was like, how am I going to do this? But with God, anything is possible. And also, too, now what I know that I didn't know back then is that God loves me a lot, right? Like, I came in here heavy burden, right? But if I can just lay all my burdens at God's feet, like, one of my favorite scriptures that I've been, like, meditating on recently is, like, come to me all who are heavy burdened, I will give you rest, right? Because I didn't realize it, but, like, in my alcoholism and even in sobriety, like, when I'm in self-will, like, I'm doing, working, not resting in, like, God's will or God's plan, because I think things have to go Kimani's way. But when I finally give up and surrender and do things God's way, things just happen so much more peacefully. And so by the time I get to my men's step, I'm able to face these people face to face, eyeball to eyeball, no paper, and tell them all the things I've done to them, right? Like, to my mom, I was able to give her all that money back. To my stepdad, the guy I thought I would never give amends to. Like, I remember I told my sponsor, I could care less if I give him amends. Like, I will not drink. And she told me, she's like, Kimani, do you think you're special? You are a garden variety drunk. If you do not make this amends, you will drink again. And I never forget, at my sister's high school graduation, he was there. I asked him if we could speak together, like, separately. And, you know, I just laid it out to him. Like, I let him know about the poisoning. Didn't know if he knew I did that, but he knew, you know. I let him know about the disrespect, which was obvious, you know, and my malice towards him. And, you know, and it's just so crazy because, like, all the stuff that I thought, well, he actually did, all the stuff that he, like, did to me and my family, it just never got brought up. It was just me and my faults. And after we had that conversation, he just told me, like, Kimani, I just want you to be a good, present, big sister, and that is it. Like, we're good and we're clean. And I'll never forget after my brother's graduation, because that's their last kid together, him and my mom's, they took this family picture, like, with all of them. And I just remember being so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous, because I felt like, because of my, like, calm demeanor, and I'm not saying I don't take credit for it, like, the whole thing, but, like, because of the fact I was able to make things right with Terrence, it gave my mom a little bit of edge to be a little bit nice as well. It gave the siblings a little bit of peace to be okay with the both of them. And we could take a picture together. And that may not sound, like, big and grand, but I'm telling you, the way that they used to be together with abuse and all that crap, like, that is a miracle, like, beyond that I can even, like, ask for. And so I'm so grateful to God for that. And I just have more men's experiences. And what I realized, too, is, like, through that experience, that everybody's doing the best they can, right? Including me. However, we can all do better in some way, shape, or form. And we're all God's children. Like, no one deserves to be harmed, right? Like, and I am not entitled to anything. And so Sammy finished taking me through the steps. And like I said, I was kind of crazy when I was newly sober. And so, like, I didn't really know how to shut up in my house with my mom anymore. And so I ended up moving out and coming to Los Angeles to the Pacific Group because my sponsor had an opening in her sober living so that I could do the Pacific Group in person. Excuse me. And when I came out here, I had like about 10 months sober. And I just thought I knew a little something. And so I was like, oh, I'm almost at a year. Like, I don't have to keep going to a meeting every day. Like, this is lit. And my sponsor was like, oh, no, you're going to go to a meeting every day for another year. And I was like, but I've already done that. She was like, yeah, but we're going to go in person. And so I started going to these in-person meetings. I'm getting commitments. I'm meeting a fellowship in person because I got sober on Zoom. So, like, to, like, touch and, like, hug, like, I don't know any of that, right? Like, I was getting phone numbers from the chat. But those phone numbers I got from the Zoom chat, those women became, like, the best friends that I still have, like, to this day. And so when I come to in person, I get these commitments. And the Pacific Group just changed my life. Like, and I think one thing I'm so grateful for is that it grew me up. Like, I had a lot of, like, self-pity coming in. Like, I was just like, you know, like, why was I dealt this hand? Even with my alcoholism, like, I hated that I had alcoholism for a long time. Like, I was very bitter at God about, like, the fact that I had to, like, come to these meetings every single day. Like, I'll do it, but I was doing it so begrudgingly, right? But, like, in person, I'm like, oh, hi. But, like, in my mind, I'm like, I hate all of this. And, however, it hit me one day, like, randomly, maybe about a year ago, I was in my room, I was taking my medicine for my hypothyroidism that I take every single day, right? And I was just like playing with words. I was like, oh, hypothyroidism, alcoholism. I take a pill every day so that I don't, like, you know, pass out with my hypothyroidism. I have a daily reprieve with my alcoholism because yesterday's sobriety doesn't work for today's sobriety. And I was like, hypothyroidism is an illness, it's not looked that crazy. I was like, alcoholism is a disease, it's not looked that crazy. And it finally hit me that my alcoholism is not a moral issue. Like, even well into sobriety, I really thought my alcoholism was a moral issue. Like, I still thought I was bad. I still dealt with a lot of shame. And it took a lot of, like, fear inventories and, like, reshaping my view of God and, like, accepting that God is a loving God. Like, it took a very long time. And thank God, like, you know, that we keep coming to the miracle happens because, like, it took a lot of pause, too, because I just couldn't believe that with all the stuff I did, I can still be loved, you know? But as I, like, prayed more to God, me and Priya were in this book study, and we just finished reading Drop the Rock not too long ago. And they talked about how prayer should be classified with cheating, right? Because how good and how well it works. And so as I started praying and meditating more, I started talking to God more. And I was just, like, honest with God in my prayers. Like, God, like, and just asking him questions, like, about where I was at, my shame, can he remove it? And, like, each night I will, and it'd be, like, crying prayers, too. Each night as I prayed to God, I just felt, like, layers, like, of myself unveiling and, like, the love of God, like, me actually feeling it, like, feeling connected to God, because I was still going to church heavy, like, even, like now recently, like, I was still going to church heavy every Sunday, love everything, going to AA every single day, but I could not feel that love. But after actually spending quality time going on God dates, doing all these things, I'm like, oh, like, God is so close. And like the big book says, like, God is within me. It's not something I have to, like, reach out for. Like, God is literally within me if I'm seeking enough. And so I'm so grateful that I sought enough that God to know that God is here. And God has given me many great gifts today. Like Priya was saying, like, we drove up here from LA, you know, and the fact that we can have, like, an AA car, we're, like, get in the car. And the speaker last night was talking about that, like, oh, everybody just get in the car, we're going to hear the speaker speak. And we can just hear Raina, like, you know, talk about whatever she wants to talk about, her being on day one, and us just like laugh, listening to music, talking about the program together, being able to do like fun things such as like Mountain High and like fellowships and big book studies together. You know, now I have like a stable job. Like I have friendships before I get to the job. Like I have friendships that I can actually show up for. And when they tell me something, I'm not get offended, right? I recently had a friendship breakup because one of my defects is lying, right? Like, and in my friendship, like, it just kept getting worse and worse. And I didn't even realize, like, I was lying. Like, I thought it was, like, omitting. But regardless, like, it made a tear on our friendship. And for the first time, I was, like, actually, like, able to hear her without, like, pride, like, buffing up or me saying, like, oh, I don't need her, screw her. Like, I heard her and I said, okay, like, well, she needed space. And now I know, like, my defect of lying is like something I need to work on, right? Like, I lied to Priya like 2 weeks ago. And I told her in that moment, like, oh, I just lied to you. Like, I'm so sorry. And, you know, she just asked me point blank, period, why did you do that? And I have no idea, but it's like, again, when it comes to me and my alcoholism and my selfishness, I want to look a certain way. I want to be seen as a good person. Like, these stuff still have not, like, left me. It's something I'm constantly, like, working on. But the fact, you know, that I'm able to have the grace to actually change if I stay sober, I'm so grateful to God for that. And thank God me and Priya are still friends. But and so I'm able to still change, like, and have relationships that I really care about. For my job, I actually show up. Coming to AA, like, as Priya said, has showed me to show up for my job. And my drinking, I could care less about showing up. I was actually on disability because of my alcoholism, which was something that my boss recommended because I kept missing. And I took advantage of that system. And so when I made amends to my phlebotomy job, they told me, they was like, Kimani, all we want you to do now is show up for work. Please, like, we don't care what your mindset is, what you feel, just show up to work. And as of late now, like, I've been showing up to work and I got a 90% on my, like, employee review, which is honestly, like, crazy. And, you know, I'm actually, like, loving like what I do now, and I'm working on doing something better. I was able to finally purchase me my own car. Like, after making so many financial amends, I'm trying my best, you know, to be self-supporting. I was able to buy me a car recently and be of service to newcomers, like how people were of service to me with rides to meetings. And it's just, this is like the biggest, the best deal that I didn't realize I was going to get. Like, from AA, I thought all I was gonna get was sobriety, right? Another day to stay sober because I didn't wanna lose my life. Because I knew to drink really was to die. Like, I was like on the edge. But what I got in return from Alcoholics Anonymous is that I got a mend in my family. You know, like, my relationship with my dad even is so much better and whole now, right? I have friendships that I'm like able to be present for, be a part of. The fact I'm even able to be present, right? Like, I remember I was talking to Raina a little bit before the break, and she told me, like, when she was in the conversation, she was actually listening. And I was like, honestly, like, that's me too. Like, even like 2 years or whatever, like, sometimes I could be in my head and you're having a full conversation with me and it's like over my head. But now I'm able to be present and be with you all, right? And also too, as well, like, I'm working the steps, like, again, and like I realized, like, we never like stop. Like, I asked my sponsor recently, like, when are we gonna meet again for step work? Because she's been out of town. And she was like, Kimani, we're gonna meet, you know, don't worry. Like, you don't have to rush it. She said, but step work is not only when we sit across the table. Step work is how you live your life. Step work is the principles that you're doing, right? Like, she said, so when you're thinking about when you wanna meet for step work, I want you to think like that when you're at your job, when you're talking to your friends, with your conduct with men, that's all step work. And I was like, got it. You can say no more. And I'm just so grateful because, like, Alcoholics Anonymous has made me a woman that's a lady of dignity and grace. And that is something that I did not believe I was. But even with all of my actions, I was always that. Even today, like, I am still that. And if you're new, before I leave you today, I just want to say, like, before you think that this thing doesn't work, give it a try. Like, do all your steps. Like, if you're at step 4, keep going. If you're at step 9 and you haven't finished those amends, keep making it. That freedom that's on the other side is so worth it. And it's not anything that I'm doing or that you all are doing it. God is the orchestrator of all of this. So all of your heavy burdens, as I said before, give that to God, and he will truly give you rest. So thank you so much.